Spring fans, welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. You're listening to a beautiful podcast. Hello, world. I hope your day is going as swimmingly as mine is, because, of course, I am in beautiful, absolutely stunning, gorgeous Istanbul, Turkey, where I was presenting at the Epic Spring One Tour event here in Istanbul, where we had, of course, a huge reception, absolutely epic, and for which I want to say now. Bear with me here. Teşekkür ederim, which, as I understand it, means thanks very much, right? Which is it's a useful thing to learn. Useful thing to learn. People have been so friendly all around the world, so I try to learn how to say thanks. It's a true pleasure, of course, to be here. And I'm not looking forward to leaving, but soon I will have to leave. I have to go to Chicago, where, of course, I'll be doing a masterclass and a talk at the Go To Chicago event. And, of course, I'll be partaking in my one of my favorite rituals, which is the Epic Intelligentsia Coffee, which you can find in a number of different cities, but I found first in Chicago, and I enjoy it. This episode, my friends, is a very special one for me. It's a discussion with Spring Cloud Task and Spring Batch lead Michael Manila that we recorded while in South Africa a few weeks ago for the Epic Spring One Tour South Africa event. Michael and a number of others of us on the Spring team and I, we all got together and went on safari, went into the bush, as they say, and saw some of the most amazing, breathtaking critters known to humanity, just strolling about because it's their world and we're just living in it. It was beautiful, absolutely amazing, and Michael's a pro photographer, so I was super grateful when he sent me the photos that he took from that outing. Michael is a person with whom I've had the privilege of working since Pivotal's beginning. He was there even before that, since the VMware days. In addition to all of that, and in addition to being a manager at Pivotal, he's also a co-host on an absolutely wonderful podcast called Off Heap, on which I think I've appeared a couple times, certainly at least once, and I love Off Heap. I listen to it all the time. If you like this podcast, I expect you'll probably love Off Heap. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to sort of be there and just listen to the podcast and listen to what's happening. The gang gets into some interesting discussions, and I love listening and being a fly on the wall for that. So I think this particular discussion was a lot of fun. Michael and I have a shared passion for batch processing. It's one of those things where you really want to have a framework, right? You really don't want to have to reinvent this particular wheel, because by its very nature, batch processing is something that will take forever. And by the time you discover the bug, it'll be hours or days later, right? So it's good to have a framework in which you can confidently build, or on which you can confidently build and in which you can trust, like, of course, Spring Batch. I had a lot of fun. I certainly hope you enjoyed as well. You're listening to a beautiful podcast. And today I'm joined by my buddy, the one, the only, the amazing, inimitable, Michael Manila. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Ah, buddy, I'm good. How are you?
Awesome.
What do you do for us? Before we get too far down the road, why would people know your name? I know you because you're awesome. But you work with Pivotal. You're part of the team. I've known you for forever and a day, it seems like, because we've been. We have humble beginnings in the book publishing industry. What do you do?
I wear a few different hats. With how I know you best would probably be with my work with Spring Batch. I'm the co-project lead for Spring Batch. I'm also the lead and founder of Spring Cloud Task. I'm an author. I actually have a new book coming out, The Definitive Guide to Spring Batch from A Press. I'm also on a podcast called Off Heap. It's a pun and podcast about the JVM related technology.
I love that podcast. Thank you. I think I've been on that
you have?
Once or twice.
You have. That's been awesome.
Good show. So that's the Off Heap or just Off Heap?
Off Heap.
Okay. So downloadable wherever fine podcasts are purveyed.
Yep. Also on Twitter at Off Heap.
Yeah. Okay. And so you, when I first met you, you were writing, you had a book on Batch, and you're saying you've got a new book on Batch.
Yep.
With whom?
A Press.
Okay, good stuff. And when I first met you, that was, what, 2011?
Six years ago.
Yeah.
6.5 years ago. So 2013-ish.
Okay. Is that when you first joined us?
Yeah.
I think I
must have. 6.5 years ago.
I think I met you before. I think we have a mutual
a little bit,
editor.
Maybe a little, yeah, a little bit before. Yeah, I feel bad now. I feel bad now because I've been trying to like
Steve Anglin.
Yes, yes.
So we both are. I'm an alumnus at A Press. I'm an A Press alumnus, and you are a continuing rock stars. Yes. You're in the process of being awesome. You have continued to be awesome, right? Whereas I have stopped being awesome, I guess, is the past participle of...
You've transitioned to a new form of awesome.
Oh, I'm doing podcasts. What can I say? And so that's cool. You did that. And then next thing I know, you and I were on the same team over on the spring team. We're on the same, fighting the good fight. And how'd you get there?
So interesting story, because my journey from the enterprise boring job to the amazing job that I have today is not the traditional path from enterprise to open source.
Right.
So I actually used the framework that I'm now co-founder on, or co-lead on, Spring Batch, in a previous life.
Right. I think that's actually pretty typical for a lot of the people in the Spring team.
Fair enough. But they typically don't, the next step, write a book about it.
Right. No, that's true.
So that's what I did.
Right.
I wrote my first book about it. That led me to getting more involved with the people, specifically, I bet, Dave Sire, the good doctor.
Yeah. Yep.
Who informed me at the time that there was the forming of a new JSR, JSR 352, which is the batch spec, in which case I inquired about being on the expert report. And at that point, they let me on, so I did my work there. And I was on there with
Wayne.
Exactly, an amazing guy, Wayne Lund. Yep.
Love that guy. And by the way, for people who don't know, Wayne has been involved in Spring and the and Batch since day zero.
Yep. He was on the original team.
But he only joined officially much later, right? But if you've seen his code from 10 years ago, right? I mean, that Spring Batch was what, 2006? I mean,
we just had our 11th birthday a couple weeks ago.
2008? So yeah, 2008. Yeah. Okay, but I remember hearing about it. I remember QCon and InfoQ and whatever.
Yep.
So and by the way, tell people, how did Spring Batch come about? Because people don't realize how prolific it is, right? How entrenched it is. And part of that, I think, came from the sort of its nascence, right? It's out of Accenture, right? Co-developed with Accenture. So
So it was a co-effort with Accenture and Spring Source at the time, back way before the Pivotal days,
right?
Accenture had been doing and still does a lot of mainframe transformations, mainframe work, and those kinds of things. And they took a lot of the patterns that existed in that world and translated them into patterns that made sense in an object-oriented, Java-based, Spring-based world.
Right. And so going back to where we just, I didn't mean to skip a thread context shifting, back to that led you, that being that really useful project led you to write a book about it and join the expert group, which then led to what?
Which led to me meeting Wayne Lund.
Yeah.
And at the time, Spring Batch was looking for a lead.
Right.
A new lead, and Wayne asked me if I was interested, and that's like your favorite rock band calling and saying, "Hey, you want to
be the lead singer?"
Exactly. I'm interested. and the rest they say is history from there.
Yeah. So you from there, what version did you
my first release as me as the lead was 2.2.
Okay.
So
we're at now 4.
We just did 4.1. We're working in 4.2 now.
That's a, in spring release terms, that's years and years and years. So it feels like it, for me and you, it feels like a minute ago.
Yep.
But it has been a long journey, my friend. It has been a long journey. I've spring batch was led by, for the better part of, I think, your, what you and I recognize as the history of spring batch, it was Dave Sire, right? Yep. Dr. Sire.
Yep.
But
that was, and it's interesting because Dave Sire is known, you know, for all of the prolific pieces of
the good stuff.
Exactly.
And the stuff.
But Spring Batch was really his introduction. Like, yeah. That was his baby. That was his introduction into the team. So.
And it worked. And it's super useful, right? You and I both have it. I'm an unabashed fan, obviously, of Spring Batch, right? And for me, the 2006, 2007, 2008, that was an interesting kind of time for the Spring projects, right? I remember there's Spring, the framework, and that became the sort of thing that motivated Interface 21 and then SpringSource.
Yep.
And suddenly around 2000, we had a CG, which became Spring Security. So suddenly now Spring had an offshoot, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you had Spring MVC, which was shipped with Spring framework proper, but it was a separate brand.
And back then, there were still people who were still even, making the decision, you know, do you use Struts with Spring? Do you use Spring MVC? Like, there was actually that conversation.
And you could do Spring inside of an EJB server.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And then, but then eventually we started having these projects that were separate. Well, like, Spring MVC was part of Spring, right?
Yep,
they were shipped at the same time.
Yep.
Whereas separately, Spring, you had Spring Badge, you had Spring Integration, you had a CG, and then that became Spring Security.
Yep.
These are all projects that had their own life cycle, their own development team, their own, and, you know, they shared common
foundation.
Common foundations, common patterns, common idioms, you know, all these things that you hope they would share. But they started to do their own thing independent of Spring Framework. And that all happened around, into my mind, it was like 2006, 2007,
sounds
2008.
About right.
And Spring Batch was one of those, like, out of left field for me. It was just like, well, of course they're going to solve that problem because it's one of those things that we've all done, right? It's one of those things we've all, you know, we've all experimented with writing an ETL job in college, right? It's just, no, we're not proud. None of us are proud of this, right? We've all had to do it, though, right? It's just one of those.
For yourself.
Yeah. Well, but nobody likes doing that. It's just tedious work. So it's just, so to have that, for me, that was a big deal. To hear them, it wasn't, I don't think even then you would say that Batch was like glorious, right?
No, you're right. Batch wasn't sexy then, and it, frankly, hasn't been sexy very much since, but it's a necessity that, you know, all just about every enterprise needs. But it's also interesting when you look back that it was, to your point, one of the first offshoots.
Yeah.
And it's like, interesting place to start.
Yes.
If you were to start and be like, what do you think is the next great big thing? I doubt Batch would have been the thing that came top of mind.
Or EAI, right? So here we've got integration and enterprise integration and our enterprise application integration patterns. And we've got Batch. Well, who does EAI? Well, TIBCO, Rendezvous, Axway. Who does Batch, COBOL, Kix? I mean, these are not exactly the hipster technologies du jour. You know, these are the entrenched sort of verticals that dominate the enterprise and for which there have been countless golf games played, right? Right. You and I both know that these are vendor-driven technologies normally. So to have these open source, lightweight things you could just deploy and have them developed by people who really understood the use cases, Accenture knows what's what, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Sire in the Batch world.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, Spring Batch was even built on patterns that had been circulated within Accenture for years before. There was a book, and I don't have my notes in front of me to have the title, but there was a book of patterns that circulated within Accenture that a lot of these patterns would that end up being Spring Batch came from.
Really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And so, like, really, it was the springification and the unification of these pieces into a solid framework that became Spring Batch.
Oh, that's so cool. See, I knew there was a long story to history. I didn't know there was an actual book, a tome, that sort of formalized these ideas. That's
my don't get me wrong, I don't have a copy of the book. I should get one. But my understanding is it was just a generic book of patterns, if you will, and architectural ideas. And like I said, a lot of those came out, were assembled in the Spring Batch.
We should... We have so
show notes.
Well, yeah, show notes. And also, We should definitely have Wayne on this podcast one of these days.
Yes, yes.
That's a note to ourselves.
Yes.
Wayne is, I think, one of the unsung heroes of the engineering group. Just
couldn't agree more.
I don't know if people listening have ever had the privilege of meeting Mr. Lund, but he's always got a happy, he's always got a smile. Mm-hmm. He's always willing to put in the extra work. He's just, and he's been working in batch in some form or another for longer than anybody, I think, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was literally one of the original developers on the team.
Right.
So, I mean, he worked with Dave and Lucas Ward and all those guys back in, you know, the day. So, yeah, I mean, the guy's been around it for as long as he's been around.
And, yeah, always ceaseless energy. So, but anyway, so Batch, you came on board, you worked on the expert group for JBatch, right? That's the JSR.
Yep.
At some point, I remember they had a batch. They had a batch specification that didn't look anything like the way people were building batch apps, right? And so suddenly it was made apparent to the expert group that maybe that approach wasn't going to work. And suddenly, to my sort of, as I saw things contemporaneous with all this, was suddenly JBatch looked pretty similar to Spring Batch. Right. And so I expect that you and Wayne had something to do with that, right?
Quite a bit of,
And I remember this discussion. I remember our discussion, our inner turmoil about, well, you know, how do we extract the domain of Spring Batch without actually extracting out Spring Batch, right? So how do we make it so that we can build on top of this? And so that it makes sense for others as well, right? Yeah. And I think you and Wayne and the team did a really great job of walking that line, of being able to sort of extract out the common idioms of the common domain of batch jobs. What is the common domain of batch jobs today? When you think about batch jobs and batch the domain itself, what is the thing that is common to JBatch and to Spring Batch and other batch technologies?
So, I mean, it goes back to how you define the process. I mean, when you think of a batch job, it's a process that executes from start to finish without interaction or interruption. It's not like a web app where it sits there waiting for somebody to say, hey, I need something, and then it replies, right? Batch jobs get kicked off and do it all at once. So you have certain levels, if you will, of building that. You've got the job, which is the overall process. That's the thing I'm going to kick off and run from start to finish without interaction.
Start to finish. So that means that they're finite, right?
Exactly.
They end.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. They have a finish, which is rare in most other workloads.
Right.
So the job defines the overall, you know, life cycle.
Now, is a batch job, is there anything about a batch job that implies immediacy, or could it be like, does a batch job finish in 5 seconds, or can it finish in 5 years?
If there isn't anything that requires it to finish immediately. Okay. The 5 years thing might be
a little out of bounds.
Perhaps. Yeah.
5 hours.
Yeah. The running batch jobs that take hours or even days is not uncommon.
Right.
In enterprise worlds. So if you think about, translating that to more traditional mainframe, for example, processes, you know, the job might look similar to the JCL of that world.
Right.
And then you've got the job is broken up into steps. So each one of these steps are individual, independent processing units. And so, again, it's no different than a step within JCL.
So what is a step? Why have multiple steps? Why not just have one step? What is a step defined uniquely?
So it's going to define all of the components that are responsible for executing a finite piece of work. So you may have one that imports data from a file into a database.
Right.
You may have one that extracts data from a database into a file. You may have, you know, it can obviously get as complex as you want or as simple as you want. I've seen steps as simple as just insert a row into a database table that indicates the date for this set of runs, kind of thing.
Right.
And it's like, that is the global, like, that means batch is starting for the night, kind of thing.
Right.
And then it runs all kinds of different jobs and stuff. But that one step, that's its responsibility, was set the date.
Right. So basically that, which might act as a semaphore or something. So
exactly.
Don't try and do the same thing again.
Yep.
Now, okay. So that's another good point, which is you'll have multiple runs of a batch job, right? So there's a difference here between the definition of a job and the execution of that job.
Yeah, so the job itself, I like to consider as a template.
Right.
So think of it as a class definition, which in Spring Batch it basically is.
Right.
So you've got this definition, and then you can run that multiple times. And even with that, we have different representations for it. We've got the job instance, which is the logical run for it, which is I've got my Monday run, my Tuesday run, my Wednesday run, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But let's say on Tuesday, that job failed when you ran it the first time. I needed some way to represent that I ran that more than once for the Tuesday run.
Right.
So that's where the job execution comes in. So a job instance can have multiple job executions. So a job execution is the physical run.
Okay.
So you've got the logical run, job instance, the physical run, job execution.
Okay. So the physical run could be, it is the job instance is what we get when we parameterize a job for a given run, and it's sort of the archetypical, if everything goes right, this is what that looks like, but that's not always the case. So we have these executions that then describe what actually happened. Here's what we planned, here's what we actually got, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, when I run a job, you have multiple steps, right? Mm-hmm. Each one of these steps can do, they're just steps in the overall sort of process, right? And each one of these steps, going back to that level here, it can read data, it can write data, transform data.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, okay. Spring Batch at its core is a state machine.
Yeah.
So you move from state to state to state. Mm-hmm. Step is one type of state. There are other types of states within Spring Batch. A decision is an example of that.
For routing.
Yep. Yep, between different steps.
Right.
But that's essentially what it is. So each step is a state, is a phase in the state machine. So you know, I execute phase one, then I determine what is my next state. What do I transition to?
Right.
And so that's where you determine, and you can. It's not a linear thing. So it's basically this graph of steps or states that you can determine, you know, based on different logic and whatever you need to define the flow of your job from start to finish.
And it's Turing complete, it sounds like. It sounds like I can do recursion and iteration, you know, without a priori knowledge. I can say, okay, iterate over these keys and create new job executions, new steps for each one.
You can. I don't know that, depending on the use case, if I'd recommend doing it that way, but yeah.
Now, batch jobs, it sounds like, are... Okay, so zooming back out again, we've got a job. We've got the job which has steps. The steps have inputs and outputs and processing, or they can just be a generic thing that writes data that can do something sort of
nebulous.
Nebulous. It can be just a placeholder for logic that has to happen before something else, right? A step in the state, in the process, and eventually you get to the end of it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the end of it might, as we just discussed, it might be 5 seconds, it might be 5 years, right? I mean, not going to be 5 years practically, but it could be, right? Now, last I checked, computers don't love things that take 5 years.
You're right.
Right? And in the age of the cloud, of course, you know, you don't want to build systems predicated on the idea that systems have to be up and running for 5 years, right?
Your ops team won't like you very much if you do.
No, it's a hard thing to ask. It's a hard sell, even in yesteryear when you optimize for high availability. But nowadays we optimize for times remediation. So what should happen? What would happen if, for example, a node got the electricity was pulled out of a machine in a batch job? Like, you know, I've got this long running process. I've got this long running stateful, presumably.
Yep.
Thing.
So yeah, Spring Batch is backed by what's called a job repository, and that is a data store that typically is persisted into a relational database that persists a state. So that job instance, that job execution we talked about earlier, those are domain objects that are stored in tables into a database, and those indicate certain metadata about where you're at in the job. There's also at the step level a step execution, and that indicates where you're at with what happened in that job execution. So job instance will have one or more job executions. Job execution will have one or more step executions. Those are the physical runs of each step.
Right.
And so each one of those is also persisted at the database. So when I, let's say to your point, a job fails and I restart my job, it's Spring Batch is first going to look at those tables and say, okay, what happened last time?
And like, how far did we get, for example?
Exactly. How far did we get? What steps ran? What steps didn't run? And then it's also going to compare that against the configuration of the template, that the job definition.
Right.
And say, okay, based on these two things, what do I do? And so by default, the typical use case is it's going to restart where I left off. So let's say I've got a three-step job and it failed on step two, and it was reading in a file that had a million records, and it failed on record 25.
Right.
So it rolled back, you know, let's say to record 20.
Yeah.
When it restarts, it will skip step one, start in step two, and restart at record 20, and continue on from there.
Okay.
So that's by default.
Okay, that sounds very useful. And it sounds like, so that means that if somebody pulled the power out of the machine or my cloud instance died, I would get a sane behavior and I'd have a better chance of getting to the end, to the finish line, right? Even if the job ran tonight, yep, and it ran for 5 hours and failed to finish, right? I didn't lose all my state, right?
Correct.
So, do we keep track of every single, you know, what's the granularity of being able to restart? Where, like, does it restart? Does it know exactly where to, how to proceed with an in-flight transaction that got killed right in the middle of the?
Yeah, no. So it's at the commit level. So
okay,
it's at the transaction level. So when you think about a typical Spring Batch step, it's all transaction based. Batch processing in general is a very transactional thing.
Yeah.
And so when you think about batch processing, the typical model, I'll stick with this, is chunk-based processing. Mm-hmm. So there you're reading in items one at a time. Mm-hmm. You are processing them as you read them, and then you write them out in bulk, in bulk. And if you have a large data set, let's say you've got a million records you're processing, you're going to break those down into what are called chunks. And each chunk is executing its own independent transaction. Mm-hmm. So I start a transaction, I process, let's say if I've got a million records, let's say I'm gonna process 1,000 records per transaction.
So a transaction here is a batch of writes?
It's a batch of records.
Right.
Typically defined by the input, not the output.
Okay.
So if you set a chunk size specifically by item number,
right,
that's gonna be a read count, not a write count.
Okay.
In fact, you can theoretically read 1,000 and write one.
Right.
Because
sure,
you could have filtered out the other 99 or 999.
Right. Okay. You will take no more than n number of input records, and that'll get somehow translated into a chunked batching kind of write.
Yep.
And that, but the point is, if I have a million records, I'm reading 1,000 at a time. I do that 1,000 times, and eventually I get to the finish line. Right.
Yep. Yep.
If I fail at the 999,000th boundary, yep, right? Like, I'm just about to start the last 1,000 records.
Yep.
I'm two records into the last 1,000 records.
Yep.
And I fail.
Yep.
Utterly and catastrophically.
Yep.
The node gets powered down or whatever. What happens when I restart?
So the transaction will have been rolled back to the previous state.
Okay. So I can roll back the 1,000 records. So anybody who knows anything about transactions knows that you can, there's state that gets kept on the server, on the transactional server, the resource, in this case, the JDBC database or the file system or whatever, right? Where, you know, I don't want to ask my JDBC database to keep a million writes in buffer.
Correct, why we break it down into chunks.
Right, because it's inefficient, right? So,
yes.
So it'll roll back to the last boundary, which is, in this case, 1,000 records.
Correct.
So I'll lose those two writes, but not all the previous 999,000.
Correct, right. Exactly. And actually, the way we do most of the writers out of the box, you typically wouldn't have lost anything other than the buffering of that write.
Right.
So for example, if you're writing to a database, we use batch, we use a batch update. So the write piece of it that you would have lost,
yeah,
is just calling prepared statement dot batch update kind of thing.
Right.
So
and doing nothing multiple writes at the same time.
Right, exactly. Nothing would have hit the database yet. Nothing would have gotten to that point yet.
Right.
Files, even those, we batch those up in memory, and we actually hit the disk all at once.
Aha. So you
we do hacks around all
or
that
nothing
stuff
either way.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, what about things that aren't? So we just mentioned files. That's a great point. Files are not, strictly speaking, transactional.
Correct.
Right? There's no sort of There's no, you know, you can't do JTA on a file system.
Yep. Yep.
And so what if I wanted to get transactional semantics for things that aren't transactional? Does Spring Batch help me with that?
We do as best as we can.
Right.
So for example, we've got a writer that, you know, the flat file item writer, that one, on a restart, mm-hmm. we will look at the size of the file in bytes, and we are aware of where, how big, basically how big the file should be after each commit.
Right.
And so if we've got a file that is not the appropriate size, in other words, chances are the typical scenario is half of a write got done because something blew up there, we'll truncate the file to the appropriate spot.
Right.
And then continue writing.
That's incredible.
Now things like, we have an email writer or an SMTP writer.
Right.
Yeah, there's no rolling back on those. Like, those have sailed.
they're either out there or they're not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, that's a great point, though. So some things are just, there's no way to, like, hard reset the state and just roll back to zero.
Right.
But some things are, when you try them, they fail.
Yep.
But you still want to be able to try them. And so I know that we have a, you know, people might be surprised to know that we have a very interesting project called Spring Retry, which I think is one of our, I think I saw some crazy number where it's like one of the most downloaded projects just by virtue of the fact that it's transitively dependent upon by so many other Spring projects.
Spring Batch, Spring Integration, a whole bunch of
Spring
other things.
Spring Cloud itself. Yep, I mean, how does that figure in? What does Spring Retry do to help us here?
So first of all, Spring Retry actually came out of Spring Batch.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So it was actually the Retry template and a lot of that stuff came out of Spring Batch from back in the day. But yeah, so it provides all the fault tolerant semantics within Spring Batch. So retry, skip, all that kind of stuff. That's where the Spring Retry comes in handy. So you can identify exceptions and skip them, for example. And we've got listeners at all these different interaction points as well. So a common pattern would be to, if you're looking to if you're working on a fire or working on a process and it's in the middle of the night and you don't want to fail the job because you don't want to hold up people downstream, you know, you could skip the record, write it to, let's say, an error file and look at it in the morning kind of thing. And all of that's provided within Spring Retry.
Right. That's super useful. And of course, people can use that independent of Spring Batch.
Yep.
As we say, it is a separate project.
Yep.
Quite a nice project. I, you know, right now we see in the world of microservices, we see a lot of people looking for circuit breakers. Spring Retry now has a circuit breaker support.
Which actually is a great addition even for Spring Batch because, you know, when you look at how things work in, for example, Retry. So we talked before about you got this chunk that's 1,000 records large, right?
Yeah.
So when you try, enact the retry logic on, let's say, an item processor. So I'm the process phase of a step, and I want to retry an exception for that.
Mm-hmm.
The way Spring Batch actually works is it's going to roll back that 1,000 record transaction, set the transaction size to 1, and process them individually because we don't know which one caused the error.
Wow.
But that has a cost.
Sure.
Whereas if you use a circuit breaker, you can actually get around that cost because the circuit breaker functionality can kick in without causing the batch rollback.
Oh, wow. So I can retry individual records.
Exactly.
Oh, before, so I can make it to set, you know,
you can circuit
555 and then try just that one.
You can circuit break them. So it's not quite a retry, but you can do those kinds of semantics. And all the code you need is already on the class path. There's nothing new you need to add.
Right. That's super cool. I mean, this is the kind of stuff. So this is the kind of stuff nobody wants to figure out, and it's certainly not the kind of thing I want to figure out after a 6-hour run, right? One of the things I think, one of the key messages about Spring Batch from the beginning was this is battle-tested, sort of bulletproof code, and it's the nobody wants to write code that they don't need to write.
Yep.
But especially this kind of stuff, you don't want to debug jobs that take 20 hours.
Yep.
You get a run that goes 19 hours and there's a bug for some reason that you don't understand or a memory leak or something like that. That's the worst kind of code to have to roll your own, right?
Yep.
That's the worst kind of code to have to build your own. So to have something like Spring Batch, which just does all this for you, is, I think, just heaven sent right now. One thing that I've kind of thought kind of interesting was all of that sophistication doesn't translate into complexity, right? So as we talked about before, there's this very simple idea. You have jobs, steps, and then you have logic that happens on those steps. And that's really, when you write the Java code that turns into a Spring Bash app, that's really all you deal with.
Yep.
Everything else we've just described is either extra in the Java code or you just get it for free.
Yep.
Right? So really, your life, day-to-day, running Spring Bash jobs is job, steps, and then optional input, output, and processors, right?
Yep.
When it comes to how do you run these jobs, well, by default, you can use a job launcher. You can inject a reference to a job launcher and then launch these jobs. And I think if you'd use Spring Batch, say, 10 years ago, that would be a very common thing. You'd stand up your own application and create some sort of management UI, and then
do Spring Batch admin.
Which is
before we retired it.
Yep, and that would have been fine. And you could even parameterize it, right? We already mentioned that you can use parameters to distinguish individual runs of the job, job instances, right? But that use case of, well, I want to run this job, Spring Boot. Today, I just create, if I define a job, Spring Boot will run it. It'll finish, it'll run to completion, and then finish, and I'm done. Now, what am I missing? Do I need anything else? I mean, that seems pretty reasonable, especially with, you've got Cloud Foundry, you've got jobs on Cloud Foundry, right? I can say I want to schedule a job.
Yep.
This brings up a whole host of questions. First of all, does Spring Batch provide any sort of scheduling support?
Spring Batch does not. That's by design.
Okay.
So Spring Batch purposely punts on the orchestration topic completely.
Right.
Because if we got opinionated on that, it would actually, number one, kind of not offend, but put off a lot of our users.
Right. It'd be the wrong choice for somebody.
Yeah. Orchestration is a very religious topic in a lot of enterprises. A lot of enterprises choose a scheduler or orchestration tool, and it's, that is the tool. Do not touch.
Autosys, BMC, cron. No, you're all wrong. Use Kubernetes or Cloud Foundry.
Yes. Control M, UC4, insert. Yeah, exactly. And so Spring Batch specifically avoids that. The goal with Spring Batch is to be able to run from any and all of them.
Right.
The Spring portfolio has some other opinions around ways to orchestrate batch jobs, but Spring Batch itself is can work with any of those.
So certainly one option is to use at scheduled, I guess. You can use cores, but I think in the world of the cloud, these aren't really the way. This is not the right granularity, I think, for these kinds of things. I want to think about these things as a function of the runtime, right? And the runtime, that's the cloud. So,
and one of the key things with what you just described is, in the cloud, I typically only want to pay for what I'm using.
Yes.
And so with that, if I'm going to use something like at scheduled, I've got this process now that is going to sit forever in between those when that schedule fires.
Yeah.
Whereas, most
platforms... And it's a point of failure, too.
Exactly, yes. Whereas most cloud platforms provide some type of finite processing.
Right.
So you can kick something off, run it, and it'll shut down, freeing up those resources and stop billing you.
Yeah.
And so like Cloud Foundry, we've got Cloud Foundry tasks. And so tasks are a finite process. You kick it off once, it runs, it shuts down, it frees up your resources. You only build for what you use. It's just a better model for batch processing.
Now tasks, you just described a task. Now, I like Spring Batch. I believe that there's a good deal many sort of use cases that fit naturally into that domain. But sometimes all I want is I've just got this thing that it just spins up, sends out an email, generates a report, and then it's done. It's not even a batch process. It's just a very simple resize an image or send an email, whatever. Yeah. One thing, one parameter, one response, that's it. There's no state, really, input and output, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a thing that I don't want in the hot path of my web application, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be sort of send a request into something asynchronously and then have that trigger a job.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got this need for jobs, Spring Batch jobs, but also these other kinds of jobs, these other kinds of tasks.
Yep.
Spring has an abstraction that lets me model all of these, right?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's actually called Spring Cloud Task.
That is convenient. So what does that give me above and beyond Spring Batch?
So Spring Cloud Task is a cloud-native framework for building finite microservices. So when you think of typical microservice use cases, most of them are never-ending. So you've got, if the REST API that you're running your website on goes down, somebody's probably going to get paged, right? But not all workloads. Yeah, exactly.
Hashtag YOLO.
But not all workloads fit nicely into that perfect little never-ending box. Batch is just one example of that, right? You named off a couple others, machine learning, batch training kind of workloads, database migrations, all those kind of things that have an expected start and finish fall into this kind of category. And so Spring Cloud Task is defined is a framework for enabling that in a cloud-native way. So it has a task repository, which is very similar to the Spring Batch's job repository.
Right.
It has some integrations with things like Spring Cloud, Spring Cloud Stream, as well as Spring Batch. So going back to Spring Batch, it provides two key integrations. Number one is it provides informational messages from Spring Batch. So by adding the @enable task annotation and a Spring Cloud Stream driver, you can get, start this job started, this job ended, this step started.
Like audit events that gets published over a broker of your choice, which is going to be Kafka or RabbitMQ or whatever.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
That's one. That
Spring Cloud Stream supports.
Exactly. That's one. And the other thing is it also offers the ability to run partition jobs in a more cloud-native way.
Tell me about that. Does that have anything to do? I was wondering about this. Okay, go on.
So let me back up in what is a partition step. So a partition step is, let's say I've got a database with 1 million records in it, and I don't want to execute those serially. So this is going to take too long.
Right, or a billion records.
There you go. What you can do is you can divide those up into partitions, and this is no different than partitions in Kafka or partitions in any general sense of the word. The way Spring Batch works with a partition step is you've got a master and a collection of workers. The master determines two things. Number one, what each partition looks like, and then how to tell the workers what to work on. So in the first phase, it determines, okay, so 1 billion records. Records 0 through 1 million is partition 1.
Right.
1 million and 1 to 2 million is partition 2, and so forth.
Right.
It packages up that metadata in each one of these step executions and sends each one of those to a worker. Now, traditionally, with old school Spring Batch, you had two different mechanisms for running partition steps. One was internal to the current JVM via threads. The other one is if you wanted to have a remote pool of workers listening to something, typically messaging middleware, but didn't have to be.
I want that one.
Then you could send those out. The problem in a cloud native world is now you've got all these workers, all these JVMs just sitting out there that for what may run once, twice a night kind of thing.
Right.
So Spring Cloud Task brings in a third option that is more cloud native, which is the deployer task or partition handler.
Oh, I want that one.
So what that does is the master still does the same first step of dividing the data up into the partitions. But now instead of sending that metadata to workers that are already running,
right,
it launches a worker for each one of those partitions.
On demand.
On demand.
Oh, exactly. So, and then does it take care of passivating those worker nodes, reclaiming the state?
Each one of those is launched as a task on the appropriate platform. Like Cloud Foundry would be a CF task.
Right.
Kubernetes, we run it as a job. And so those start, they do their work, and they shut back down, freeing up those resources.
And they give it exit status.
Exactly. So instead of having, this pool of, 100 workers, just sitting there waiting for work.
Doing nothing.
Exactly.
For most of the day.
Exactly. You launch the job, hey, I need 100 workers today. You launch 100 workers, shut them all down when you're done. Hey, I only need 10 workers today. Launch 10, shut them back down. Hey, I need 100 workers, but I only want to pay for 10.
Right.
Launch 10, keep them busy until all 100 partitions are completed, and then shut them down.
So 10 by 10.
Exactly.
That's super convenient. And that would have been, I think, I've done similar kinds of things with Spring Batch before, but that sounds like it would be one of those things where I wouldn't want to write that kind of code myself.
Mm-hmm.
So how painful is it to express and get all of that behavior with Spring Cloud Task?
It's really simple. We've got starters for the deployer itself. It's really just a matter of identifying what metadata you need to pass to those workers. So that's, and even that, the batch specific metadata is handled automatically. Really all you need to define is, what type of environment variables do you need to set up on the workers?
Okay. Like
those kinds of
things. How to initialize themselves to be able to handle the job. So exactly. So when those workers spin up, do they need to get access to, you're not communicating to them the data for that particular chunk. You're telling them what the parameters of the chunk are, and they're going to pull it in themselves. Is that
correct?
True?
Correct. Yeah. So Spring Batch has a number of different ways of scaling steps. Partitioning is one. That is probably the most efficient when it comes to communication over the wire.
Right.
Because all the master does is it sends the metadata or the description of what to work on to the workers. It's the workers' responsibility to get that data, do the work, and persist it.
So read rows, 2,000 to 3,000 in the CSV file. That means that the worker node would need to have access to an NFS mounted CSV file or something like that, right?
Correct. And that goes back to the whole idea that certain data stores are cloud native and certain ones aren't.
Yeah.
And files inherently aren't.
Aren't. Yeah.
When you're dealing with files in a cloud-native world, it's typically our recommendation to get that into a cloud-native store as quickly as possible. It's just it just opens up so many more doors.
And it happens to be that ETL is one of those great use cases for a Spring Batch. So you can start the journey of this thing that's not cloud-native with a Spring Batch shop, and then from there you could use Spring Cloud Task to make it. It's much easier for other things to consume that data.
You got it.
Right now. Okay, so that sounds. So I like Spring Cloud Task. Sounds like if I needed to launch a job, and I can use scheduled jobs on Cloud Foundry, for example, and other systems like that. So that gives me both the ability to describe from the container infrastructure point of view a thing that starts and stops and has an exit status and has parameters and environment variables and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It gives me that, mm-hmm. And I've also got the ability to manage the schedule for this. So I've got. It sounds like I've got most of what I want. What if, what a common use case, and I'm sure you've seen this, is, not only do I want to run this thing every night at midnight, but I want to run it in response to an event. Does Spring Batch give me the ability to look at FTP servers and to look at, message queues and all that kind of stuff? Or what's the easiest way for me to connect batch jobs to events?
So the easiest way to do that is actually integrating Spring Cloud Stream with Spring Cloud Task.
Right.
So you'd run your batch job as a Spring Cloud Task. And Spring Cloud Stream provides a number of capabilities to back up, Spring Cloud Stream is a framework for building message-based microservices. So think of Spring integration bootified, if you will.
Right.
Please forgive me for that description. I know it's not the most best way to do it, but for this context, that's good enough.
It's an abstraction that lets you talk about messaging channels generically, and those that are bound to backing message queue broker technology like Kafka or Google Cloud PubSub or RabbitMQ or whatever, right? Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay.
And so with that, you could have a microservice that's, to your point, looking at an FTP directory or even listening to a database, pulling a database, et cetera. But as the result of that, it can send a message to something that will launch a Spring Batch shop, Spring Cloud Task that will contain the batch shop. So you have these two components sitting out there waiting for the message. One's waiting to generate the message. One's waiting to receive any messages to launch
jobs.
Exactly.
And so the thing that produces the message could be something like Spring Innovation.
Yep.
Right? Because there's a whole catalog of adapters that look for events in the external world and translate them into messaging events that we can respond to.
Yep.
All of this, it sounds like what we've just described is all technically much simpler than it used to be,
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. It still sounds like code, right? It still sounds like something that you and I would have to write, deploy, manage, and so on. How can Spring Cloud Dataflow help us here?
So, a couple things. Spring Cloud Dataflow provides a long list of out-of-the-box applications, right? Both for on the Spring Cloud streaming side for the event consumption piece, as well as it provides a handful of tasks that are useful as well. But what it can do is it can orchestrate all of these. So I can define a stream that will manage, a stream that will consist of the thing that's listening to the FTP source and launching those jobs. I can also orchestrate jobs so that I have let's say I've got job one and then I've got jobs two and three I want to run after that, I can orchestrate that graph as well within Spring Cloud Dataflow.
That's amazing. Okay, so Spring Cloud Dataflow, it sounds like it gives me the pieces that I need to build these kinds of systems and operate them, right? That's the thing. We're building on the same Lego bricks, as it were, but it's the interface.
Yep.
Right, and also Spring Cloud Dataflow is agnostic of any particular cloud platform.
Yep.
So I can point it at Kubernetes, I can point it at Cloud Foundry, and I just sit back
all the scheduling works good, seamlessly, all the launching capabilities, all that stuff, yeah, just works seamlessly.
So we have started our discussion talking about batch jobs, which already in of itself is a whole world of it's a whole discipline, right? Mm-hmm. You and I both know that. And actually, what is your background with batch? I mean, how did you get to the point where you could appreciate that particular concoction, right? That particular world, right?
So that goes all the way back to college. In college, my first formally taught language was mainframe assembler.
Oh. Need a hug.
I also went to a mainframe school up until very recently, Northern Illinois University. Mm-hmm. There, you had to take, COBOL, mainframe assembler, JCL, databases that included things like IMS and DB2 and all those kinds of things,
The hipster technologies.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. My internship was writing JCL at the local electrical company.
Somehow, I don't think there's a Lambda school for this stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dying breed.
Okay.
And it's funny because coming out of that world, if you would have asked me on graduation day, will you be working on batch stuff? No, I picked this consulting company that I was going to because they're going to teach me Java.
Right.
Like the whole reason I picked this job is they're going to teach me Java. I'm out on the mainframe stuff. And, 6 years later, I left there and ended up at a major financial exchange.
Yeah.
Working in their trade billing stuff. So we were creating the billing behind, individual trades. When you see different trades happening in exchange, we were the ones billing for that.
I see.
So we were processing, billions of dollars a year, but it was mostly on the mainframe. And while I was there was when we migrated off the mainframe.
Ah, good time.
Yeah.
Always. By the way, I would have said that no matter when you did it. It's always a good time to get off the mainframe.
Now, a little self-confession. When the project started, I looked at Spring Batch and said, I don't think it's going to work out.
Okay.
It was Spring Batch 1 at the time.
Ah.
And there were some scalability concerns that we had at the time. By the time that was during the initial evaluation.
Right.
By the time we actually started implementing things, Spring Batch 2 had come out and we had gone with that.
Okay. Yeah. Spring Batch. And also I remember there's a Spring Batch 2 came out very quickly.
It was a very quick turnaround. Yes.
And they changed the model.
Yes.
Right.
Before one was in a purely item based model. Like
right.
The whole chunking thing that we talked about earlier did not exist in 1.0.
It's just in and out, one-to-one.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And when they added the chunk-based stuff, that's where, it's like, okay, now we can start talking about using this.
Right.
It's
an amazing piece of kit, not least of which because it has amazing people like yourself behind it. And so I think people who are using it
appreciate that. It's the community that uses it that makes it, I think, the coolest.
Yeah.
Batch processing is, it may not be the sexiest thing, but I think it provides a lot of interesting challenges as a developer.
Certainly.
When you, in an enterprise, if you're building a web application for some backend system, you're probably not going to see a ton of load, right? Let's not kid ourselves. You're not going to see, Netflix scale at every enterprise web app. Exactly. At every enterprise web app you build. That's not hard. Netflix scale isn't hard to hit with batch jobs.
Right.
Like that's table stakes.
Right.
And so dealing with problems that are that big, I just find interesting.
As do I. And I, I think batch processing has gotten us to it's gotten to a place now where people say, oh, well, batch processing, that's dead. Right. But I think there's definitely, and we've just talked about how stream processing figures into the Spring Cloud Dataflow story and Spring Cloud Stream, and there's definitely absolutely a place for stream processing, but I think it's a little foolish to say that there's no such thing as batch processing, right? That certainly isn't the case. Anything that has a start and a stop.
Yep.
Right.
Anything has a start and a stop. Also, you know, what does your error handling look like?
Right.
Are you going to handle retries and skips and all that kind of stuff? I don't know of any frameworks that handle all of that
right.
super gracefully by yourself without having to wire in, you know, 15 different queues to route all right. that stuff yourself. Spring Batch does all that pretty gracefully, I like to think.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the common question is, do I use Spring or Batch? And that those are usually the two typical, my quick responses are, is it finite? What are your error conditions look like?
Right.
And those are usually the great indicators of whether or not you want to go integration or streaming versus batch.
And also, we just did that for purposes of illustration, but as we've just talked about, it's not either or, right? You can use batch agree,
yes.
with
yes.
stream, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
it's an interesting time to be alive. And I think the cloud has given us this really interesting opportunity to set now, you know, now break apart large jobs of work,
yep.
large sized jobs, and consume them more readily, right? And so, you know, these things that we might have done in yesteryear with Hadoop, Spring Batch preceded Hadoop, and it will succeed Hadoop, right? I think there's this huge class of use cases that are just fine with Spring Batch, right? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be doing, you know, the Google scale indexing of the web with Spring Batch?
Probably not.
No. But I think you're going to be surprised. People are doing incredibly large amounts of data. They're doing efficient processing with Spring Batch, and that was true yesterday. It was true. It'll be true tomorrow. What do you think is the most interesting thing? What are you looking forward to most in the Spring team? Because now you are, in addition to your engineering responsibilities, now you are, what's the right, paper pusher, basically, right?
Pointy haired engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
Manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So what do you see our team working on?
So, I've got the direct reports really across the portfolio, which is really neat to be able to get, you know, that view with Rush portfolio. I've got people on boot, security, data flow, cloud. The key areas that I think are interesting right now, Kubernetes.
Sure. It's going to be big.
Yep.
I've heard.
People are, there's rumblings out there.
There's rumblings, yeah, yeah.
They're doing great work on security with OAuth.
Right.
Moving Spring Security OAuth into Spring Security proper is, you know, the work they're doing there is just awesome.
Right.
Obviously the boot work is amazing as well. One of the other hats though that I currently wear is I lead also a customer facing team, and that's, you know, a really interesting opportunity because getting the direct and candid feedback from engineers using our frameworks in hate or in anger is something that's hard to come by.
You right.
know, we as open source practitioners, it's something that we value a lot is any feedback we can get. And the ability for us to be able to get that directly by sticking one of our own engineers on a project is really valuable.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that I've been also heading up. And that's actually, you know, one of the things that I'm probably most passionate about.
I like, and I love that. And you and I both know that Spring, we don't build things in a vacuum.
Yep.
Right. We don't have ivory tower sort of yeah. committees that just dream up things that people might like, and then you get EGBA 1, right? Like yep. that, it isn't the way we've done things. We've always had pain.
Jurgen doesn't come down on high with stone tablets.
Right, no.
This is the way it will be.
No, yeah, exactly. There's got to be a ticket or some pain or,
yes.
you know, and we are pretty good about being loyal to feedback, right?
Yes,
so
yes.
so if a issue has, and this is, I think, this is sometimes frustrated me, but I understand it and I love it. One of the things that's always been true was if a GitHub issue or a Jira issue has more stars than some other thing that we internally would like to see done,
mm-hmm.
guess what gets done?
Yep.
The thing with the stars. Yep. That the community has spoken. That's what we focus on. Sure, some of us on the Spring team would like A, B, or C in this project or that, but we know where to go first, right?
Right. We need to take care of our community's pain points first.
Right. And our customers, that obviously includes the customer. So now to see that formalized, to see that there's a team focused on, opening to having that channel, having that discussion. Great. I love to see that. So that's really good. That's really exciting. Well, my friend, we're about at that time where our job has run its course, and we need an exit status. What do you think? Where can people find you, Michael Minella? Are you on the internet?
I am.
Okay.
I'm on Twitter, Michael Minella, at Michael Minella.
How do you spell that? Slowly.
M-I-C-H-A-E-L. M-I-N-E-L-L-A.
All one word?
All one word.
Okay, no space?
Correct. I'm also, like we mentioned earlier, I've got the podcast at Off Heap, yeah. O-F-F-H-E-A-P.
And that's a really good one, by the way, friends. The worst episode was the one I did, so ignore that one. Everything else is great. I love that show.
You've done two, so...
Pick one of them. Those are definitely one of the worst. It's a good, you should definitely listen to it. I listen to it all the time. It's a more broad...
It's a funded podcast.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bunch of people hanging out in a bar talking about, various topics related to the JVM.
Right. And that is, as you know, fertile ground for interesting discussion. So mm-hmm. that's good stuff. I'm a big fan. Anything else you want to leave them with, my friend?
Like I said, check out our podcast. My book is coming out. Should be out in May. The Definitive Guide to Spring Batch.
By A Press.
Yes. Okay. So it should be out. I believe the current date is the end of May.
Okay.
So check out
famous last words.
Well,
okay. 2019 for those of you listening.
Yes.
Yeah. In the future. All right. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Josh, for having me.
A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email or at starbuxman on Twitter, where of course my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning and Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.